My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, marketing school listeners, this is a 20 to 30 minute segment of a full interview I've done with an amazing founder, entrepreneur, creative, visionary. You're going to get a ton of insights from this. And if you want to listen to the entire thing, go search for Leveling Up with Eric Sue. That's the entire podcast that you're going to find. So you get 20 to 30 minutes here. And if you want the whole thing, you can just search for Leveling Up with Eric Sue. And without further ado, enjoy the episode.
All right, Patrick, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Good. It's good to see you. Yeah. We're at this retreat still and, final day. But Patrick, we've done a couple of these already in person, actually, at conferences as well. And I guess for those that don't know you, who are you and why should people listen to you?
Who am I? Who am I is the ultimate question, right? I'm an entrepreneur. I grew up in the Midwest, went to school in Illinois, then ended up going to Boston. I never wanted to go into business, though. I was like not one of those kids that like was doing stuff, you know, like hustles when they're in high school or college. I wanted to go kind of save the world. So I worked for the U.S. government for a while in the intel community. And then all of a sudden was like, oh, crap, I really hate the pace of the government. I want to go faster. I want to go faster. And so the best place to get speed is, you know, entrepreneurship. And so started a company. And I didn't know this at the time. This was all a little bit more kind of pushing forward. A company called ProfitWell. We help subscription companies with their pricing and their retention. Worked with everyone from DoorDash and Blue Bottle Coffee all the way to Autodesk, Notion, Lyft, et cetera. And then bootstrapped that company for about a decade and then sold it a couple years ago for over $200 million. And then worked at Paddle, which is the company that bought us as a payments company. And recently just started working on the next thing.
Okay. And whatever you're comfortable revealing here, but it seems like there are a couple frameworks you've put together with your partner, your wife.
Yeah.
Are you willing to share some of those frameworks?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So here's the hook here. So what are the best questions to ask with your partner to have an unbreakable bond?
An unbreakable bond. Oh boy, high bar. Here's the premise. Most people suck at relationships, and it's completely their fault. And when you look at all of the research around relationships, all of the like studies that have been done, et cetera, there's this researcher named Gottman, G-O-T-T-M-A-N, I believe is how it's spelled. He, you know, has researched this for his entire life, his entire career. A lot of stuff comes down to limiting resentment. And the way you limit resentment is through communication and alignment. What is a beautiful way to do that we've all learned, especially if you're listening to this podcast? All the stuff we learn in business, right? And what I get a lot of crap for when I talk about this is I took many of the things I learned in trying to develop to be a decent, if not a good manager, and I applied it to my marriage. Now, there isn't the power dynamic and all this other stuff. Everyone who's like clutching their pearls listening to this, I can kind of calm those particular nerves. But what ends up happening is like my wife and I have weekly one-on-ones. Like, why do we have one-on-ones? Well, there's so much stuff that goes on during the week. Oftentimes you can be living with your spouse, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, and you don't actually have any conversations or you don't push anything forward for maybe a couple of weeks because you're both busy, you know, you're just watching some Netflix, you're getting dinner, whatever it is. But for us, it was like, my wife would ask me to do things right before I went to bed, which is the worst time to ask me. And I would commit to those, which makes this ultimately my fault. But then I would forget about it, right? Well, now it's like, throw those into the one-on-one, because now it's like, oh, I need to get all this done. Okay, I'm going to schedule it. I'm going to go figure it out, right? But I've just limited resentment because she's not going to resent me when I don't do it, because I'm going to remember to do it at this particular point. But the other thing, and this is the thing that you're getting at, that most people mess up is, what is the shared vision for your marriage or your relationship? And it doesn't need to be like world domination and revenue and all this other stuff, obviously, that you do get into in the business world. But like, what's important to you? What do you want out of life? And having those conversations when you're dating, like on my third date with my wife, I had gotten out of a long relationship that was just terrible for a lot of reasons, my fault, her fault, etc. My third date, I was like, listen, this is what's important to me. Like, this is going to change. This is not going to change. Like, if you're on board with that, fantastic. Let's keep going. If you're not, let's not waste each other's time, right? And it was said more sweetly and less cool than I'm giving off right now.
What were some of those boundaries?
High integrity. No lying. Yeah. None. No white lies. No even smells of white lies. No like, oh, I'm going to go get coffee here and you go somewhere else. Like, just none of that. Because that, for me, I'm someone who trust is very difficult, incredibly insecure. And so it doesn't manifest well within me. Like, because it's not like, oh, is she like hooking up with someone else or something like that? It's more of like, it's more of a deeper insidious thing. Like, if I can't trust you, I'm not going to be your partner. I'm going to be someone who just lives with you. Right. And so like that's where a lot of like arguments that we might have are, is like something might happen, or I said, hey, we agreed to go do it this way, and then she doesn't. Like, that's one of my things. One of the other boundaries was around, or the things that I talk about is like constant communication. Like, no like going to bed, you know, unhappy, angry. No going to bed angry, nothing like that. Like, if something bothers you, like, say it, let's talk about it. Now, you might not understand it, so let's like have a good environment where we can talk through it. But none of this like, 2 weeks ago you did this thing, nothing like that. Basically limiting resentment as much as humanly possible. And then the third big category was around like, you know, essentially it was a selfish one, which was me, of like, this is really important to me, like building a company, always like pushing for stuff. I'm never going to be the white picket fence guy. I'm never going to be the 9-to-5 guy. I'm never going to be the big vacation guy. And that has some major benefits, and that has some major trade-offs. And so we explored a lot of those over like our first 6 months, but within our first 6 months, we knew like this was it. And so, yeah, we've been together about 9 years now. And so, yeah, but the bigger thing that you were getting at, we do offsites twice a year. I know that sounds crazy. We have an agenda,
yeah.
But it's like we go on vacation and we have an agenda that we talk through at dinners and lunches and stuff as we go forward. And sometimes there's a little bit of research that we got to do, you know, while we're sitting by a pool or something like that. But one of the big things that we did early in our relationship, and then very formally, literally we got married, and then that weekend we did this, was a series of questions just around like, what do we want? And there were questions like, and I can share them if you want to post them in the show notes, but it's like, you know, like actual physical things, like what stuff do you want? Emotional things. What do you never want to feel? What do you always want to feel? What is important to you? Service and experience things. What do you want to go do? What's really important to you? Stuff like when you're on your deathbed, what do you want to have done? What do you want to be remembered for? What do you want to make sure, you know, people, when they think of you, they think of X, whatever X is. And it was just a series of like introspective questions. And then the process was spend 90 minutes just writing. So we just wrote, spent 90 minutes each. And then oftentimes, you know, you sit with it and then we come back to it a day later, spend another 90 minutes. And then what we do is we switch lists. I look at hers, she looks at mine, and we just ask questions, not in a judgmental or any way, but literally just to understand, like seek to understand on, okay, did you mean this? What did you mean by this? And then we get those notes so we both understand. And then we spend some time literally going through each other's lists together and being like, line by line, I agree with this. I support this. I also want to do it. Or I don't care, but I support you. Or I disagree. Like, I don't think this is good, or I don't think that's what I want our life to be. And we were together, you know, the last time we did this, we've been together, I think it was 7 or 8 years at that point. And so it was one of those things where there are very few things where we disagreed. But imagine we were together for that long and we had major disagreements. Like, that would be insane. But that's how a lot of relationships are, because you get into loss aversion and you're like, I guess I should marry this person. Right. And I think those things are really important compared to kids or no kids, like stuff like that, because those are going to be really easy to figure out. But for example, like, I want to fly private everywhere. Well, if she disagreed with that or disagreed with what it took to get to that, it's like, that's a major difference, right? Or if she wanted, you know, basically to have dinner every night with the kids, that's not going to happen. Now, it can happen a lot, but it's not going to happen every night, because there's going to be travel, there's going to be stuff going on, etc. But it's just a lot of really important stuff. And then what's really important is the action that comes from that, because we then kind of align our life. And then we start to figure out, well, this year we're going to start doing this because we both agreed that that's really important to us. Or for her, time is a really important thing. So what we've started doing is we align our schedules as close as humanly possible. We wake up at the same time, we go work out, we end up walking the dog for 20 minutes. And then the rest of the day, like, there's no expectation that we're together. And then at 6 p.m. every single night, I'm done. And between 6 and 8 is hers and family time. And I basically started doing that because when we have kids, I just wanted to be in that rhythm. And then all of a sudden at 8 p.m., we start our evening routine and go to bed. So I'm literally beginning and ending the day. And that, I didn't have to give up much to do that. And she had to give up a little because she had to wake up earlier, because I wake up early. But like, she's getting so much. She's getting so much of the thing that's really important to her, which is that time and that connection, which, you know, I'm more than happy to give. And so, yeah, it's all just about alignment. And you can't align if you don't know what you want. And so many people just have no freaking idea what they actually want.
How many questions is this?
It's like 6 to 8 questions. But it's not, again, like, the purpose isn't getting exact questions. The purpose is having a prompt to have these conversations, right? Like, some stuff came out of this where, like, Jenny wants, like, and you'll be surprised too. So, like, Jenny wants to go hunting. I like hunting. Like, I love hunting. I never knew that, right? Because we never really talked about it. I haven't been able to hunt in a long time because, you know, work and all this other stuff. Now all of a sudden it's like, cool, we're going to go do an elk hunt next year, right?
That's cool.
Like, it's just a lot of stuff like that came out of it that's both surprising. And also there's other things like, oh, she really wants to visit her family. Okay, well, in the clarification, it's like, well, how much? Do you want to live next to them? Do you want to see them twice a year? Is it matter that we go there? Can they come here? And those are amazing questions to have, because I don't want 3 years of resentment building up because we didn't see her mom enough. And I didn't even know. And then she's like, yeah, we don't see our mom enough, and I'm really frustrated. And now I'm starting to have a conversation from like a very negative place because I can't make up for time that's already passed, right? And so that's what was really, really powerful, is because we could design our life. And then the other things that come out of these offsites are the shared budget, which we talked about a little bit. That budget's really important. Like, thankfully, neither of us are like hardcore spenders or anything. But like, all of a sudden, it was allowing us to be like, no, we should be looser. Like, objectively, we should be looser with certain things. We should totally spend the money to do that that thing or this other thing. And then like our shared calendar, basically, like a shared schedule of like, what trips are we going to take this year and stuff like that. But it's just all about alignment, because alignment limits resentment.
I love it. And in fact, I mean, 6 to 8 questions, it sounds like you guys are being very intentional about it. It's almost like the Amazon narrative where it's like a 6-page narrative. So it could be 3 to 6 pages or whatever.
Like, she wrote a lot more like paragraphs and sentences. I wrote a lot of bullets, right? Like, it's not, and like, what came from that is, you know, a shared doc, and it's all in Notion. We have a family Notion that's basically like, hey, this is what's important to us. And prior to this, we have shared values as a family. We have a mission as a family. We're going to like create a family crest. We're going to do some branding around it. And this is just more around like, it's important to us. Like, we are a unit. And if you're a unit, you should, you know, be really, really like successful as a unit. But obviously the aims are very different. It's fulfillment and whatever you want. Like, if you're hedonistic and your partner want to like, you know, go and party all the time, that's okay too. Like, it's just making sure that you're aligned to it, because that's what limits the resentment.
Love it. Are you happy right now?
Yeah. I know, I'm like, right now I'm tired and like ready for more hydration, but like, I think that, Yeah, I have reached a plane of peace that I never thought was possible. Anyone who's listened to me before, I often talk about this when we're talking about more personal stuff. So I grew up in a pretty abusive household, like rampant insecurity, just as a human. And there's part of that that I'm never going to get rid of. But there is nothing more peaceful than understanding your personal mission. And we didn't really get into this, but I did a lot of exploration the last couple of years of like, what do I want to do now that I have, you know, this big pile of money? Do I want to be an investor? Do I want to do a holdco? And it's like, no, I want to go after something big. And I want to, like, I'm an operator and I want to continue to be a bigger and better operator. So I know that. And then there's, when you mix that with just such a level of peace with having a partner that you are perfectly or mostly perfectly aligned, because perfection is probably not possible. Like, holy cow, like, what a life. And frankly, like, it's hard to say because, you know, I do have money now, but I think that I could have had this also prior to money. And so I think it's just, it's one of these things where, yeah, the money does help me sleep at night. But even in the beginning of money, I had more anxiety than I had before because I'd gotten to such an even keel as like an operator and as a founder and like a really even keel. And then that just threw it all for a loop because it just changed life dramatically. But I could have had this level of peace before as well.
Happiness is you decide if you're happy or not.
Yeah, happiness is a choice. Yeah. I think like there are things that make that choice easier and harder, but that's what's really funny about getting money is like, or earning money, depending on how you want to look at it and I guess your political affiliations. it's what was amazing about it is the realization that now none of my excuses are real. None of them. Like, oh, I don't want to pay the money to hire a coach, like, to lose weight. Well, you can hire a coach. You can absolutely afford a coach. Like, I think money amplifies the best and the worst of you. Mm. Because, like, if you are undisciplined in a certain area of life, now you can really be undisciplined in a certain portion of your life, right? And so I think that it's, like, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is, like, I thought, oh, all these problems are going to be solved. I'm going to be fit. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. It's like, nope, like, Those are emotional problems that no amount of money is actually going to solve. So you got to work through that, which is something I did.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I wanted to take a second to talk about today's sponsor, Ahrefs. Ahrefs is my favorite SEO tool. In fact, we use it at my ad agency, Single Brain, for internal uses and also for clients, and we've been using it for years and years. And the cool thing is they have a great academy that you can go to if you're looking to just learn SEO. And they have a free offering if you just search for ahrefs.com/webmaster-tools. My favorite feature with Ahrefs, it's a sneaky feature here, but I'm just looking at zapier.com. And what I'm doing is I'm looking at, oh, wow, they got 10 million visits in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so compared to the previous 6 months. Well, okay, how are they doing it? I can look at their site structure. So if I click on site structure, I can see that their blog has driven the vast majority of it, and it was a plus 5 million change, right? So basically what I can do is I can look at the pages that are driving that traffic, and now I have a sense for what they're doing in terms of strategy. So I can look at competitors. I can also look at our own stuff too to figure out how we can optimize our own website. So you can just check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools. That's completely free. Or you can go to the Ahrefs Academy. That's also free as well to learn more. And that being said, back to the video.
So here's another one. When is it the right time to cut loved ones out?
My instinctual answer is immediately. I don't, but obviously with a caveat, like not just cut all loved ones out. Yeah. blood is not an excuse to have terrible people in your life. And that's hard because society, there's probably an element of biology and genetics make it so that you want, you know, you want like to care for those people on some particular level, but that does not mean that you have to. Obligation is the enemy of everything. And to me, I cut my parents out really early, and that was really difficult. But it wasn't difficult because it was the wrong decision. It was really difficult because I was like, well, what will society think? Oh, am I going to have an obligation? And then there was an element of like, well, if they died tomorrow and I hadn't talked to them in years, would that be okay? And I got to a point where the answer was yes. Now, since then, my parents are back in my life. We've repaired some things. We've figured some things out. But I will never like have what you have with your mom. Like, I'll never have that. And that's okay. Like, right? And that's not like a good or a bad thing. It just is. And so I think a lot of people, they hold on to really crappy relationships that are family members, friendships, etc. And if you're listening to this, you are likely in a place, even if you're poor, even if you're struggling, you're likely in a place where you can choose your family, you can choose your friendships. And a lot of times those will be people who you share blood with, but a lot of times they're not.
It's very deep.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
And what does one do after selling their company for $200 million?
It's actually a really interesting question because I think that this is the least relatable thing, depending on who's listening to this. But you go through, like, selling your company pushes you into an existential crisis. Because you sit there and you've had this purpose for a really long time, and then all of a sudden there's like an end. And not everyone builds their company that way. We were building our company to scale like as big and as quickly as humanly possible. But all of a sudden there was this like end point, and then you as the founder or as an individual have to go, oh man, like all of a sudden my life just has dramatically changed. You kind of lost your purpose, like because you sold the company, and even if you're going to the company that bought you, things change dramatically. And then you have like a giant pile of money in your bank account, and that causes, like, again, it's a net benefit. Don't get me wrong, but there's a bunch of little like, well, now I have all these like choices. And so I went through like a good year of what I call like cocaine energy, where basically I was like, well, I can almost do anything. I can hire this many people. I hired 17 people. I bought 19 gas stations. I did a crazy amount of stuff. Some of those were really smart decisions. Some of those were really dumb decisions, but you have to kind of like learn to have wealth and then learn how to like deploy or, you know, maintain that capital, which, you know, is a problem that not a lot of people talk about because it's, again, not really relatable to talk about.
So when you sold, was there a period of time where do you feel like you were wasting money to a certain point and then you decided you had to stop, or were you you're still pretty frugal once you sold?
Yeah, your concept of money, when you get wealth, your anxiety or concept around money doesn't really change. That's a really interesting thing that I learned. Like, I have really high anxiety around money because I grew up relatively poor, and money was always like an argument or a big issue in my household. So even with, you know, a significant amount of money now in the 0.1%, I still am like, oh my God, am I spending too much money? Like, we're staying at this hotel. Mm-hmm. I went to the grocery store and got Stoke coffee the first day that we were here because I was like, I don't want to pay $8 for a coffee, right? Yeah. Which is insane. Yeah. Like, I shouldn't do that. That's so dumb. And so I've had to learn over the last couple of years how to not like be a complete idiot when it came to like my time, but also I also have had to put in things into place because now the sums of money are much, much larger. So the amount you're paying lawyers, the amount you're paying accountants, and the result of that is all of a sudden, like, you will have these high anxiety moments where it's not $100 here, $100 here. It might be $100,000 here, $100,000 there. And so I have a spreadsheet that basically I go to that just like tracks not our budget down to like the dollar, but just our general budget. And that allows me to like every time I get this anxiety, I go, oh, there's a lot more coming in than's going out. And that like calms me down basically.
How are you tracking your budget? Are you using like Tiller? Like what are you using?
No, I don't use any of the fancy apps. Yeah. Jenny and I, my wife, we have a spreadsheet. It's just got here are the big categories. You know, and we have a big plug in there. Like there's a big category that's just like other, which is just a sum of money. And then what we end up doing is every month an assistant basically like plugs those numbers in. And as long as we're within, you know, like 10, 15% one way or the other, we're like fine. But again, it was more around the anxiety of like, I don't need to look at that information like objectively, but because of my anxiety around money, it like calms me down. But it also helps me realize like, oh, we have this much money to deploy, for lack of a better word, whether it's in philanthropy or buying stuff for ourselves or experiences for ourselves, or making that money work for us rather than like miserly just putting it into a bank account and like, you know, just hoarding it basically.
Yep. And, you know, one thing, I mean, when you think about people like Elon or even our friends here, right? People, it doesn't matter what level of success you're at. The most successful I've observed in general, entrepreneurs are pretty frugal, right? So why is it valuable for entrepreneurs to be frugal?
I don't know if I accept the premise of the question, because I think that frugality can be a massive crutch. And I've seen that in myself, where I have been penny wise, pound foolish many times, right? And so for me, when I even think about building a business, my frugality was a huge advantage because it allowed me to figure out how I could get leverage, because I was like, I don't want to spend $250,000 on something. How do I spend $100,000? And with thinking and creativity, close that gap of getting even more than what I was going to get for $250,000. But it's a crutch too, because having some level of anxiety over $1,000 of this in a, you know, multi $100 million business, like, doesn't make any sense, right? And so it serves you well because it allows you to think better. But I think that the issue, especially even in my personal life, is it causes like some level of undue stress. Again, very champagne problems, but it causes some level of undue stress. And so this is where just control comes into place. This is why we have the budget. And I'm like, we've agreed on the budget. This is what it is. And like, then we're slowly being able to like be very thoughtful about the money. So I guess in summary, like, frugality is often a crutch for like not being thoughtful for where like your money is going. Very similar to someone who's on the opposite end of the spectrum and just spends a lot of money.
It's interesting because yesterday when we were sitting here, and this he will go anonymous. One of our mutual friends said, "Why would you ever pay more than $180,000 for an individual, right?" But there's no anxiety in the way how he said it. He's very sure in how he said it, right?
Sure.
So how would you respond to that?
I think that. And it was for like a team member, like paying $180,000.
Never paid more than $180,000
for an employee. Yeah, for a team member. Yeah, and I think that like rules like that, and I have several rules that I've said that are similar to that, you realize very quickly how dumb you are, right? Because it's not about that, like, you can't have a hard and fast rule like that on anything, right? Like, I remember when I first started traveling for work, I was like, why would anyone buy business class? Why would you ever do that? Why would you waste the money? We're all going to the same place. But then you're on the road for 175,000 miles a year, and you're like, no, this is a bus. I would like the best seat in the bus so that like I can get a little bit of sleep, or I don't have to waste an hour in line or anything like that.
Right.
And so I think it's more about, what are you trying to do? Like, money is a tool, just like your time, and they're fungible. So you can actually gain a lot of time with your money, right? And so it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know, $180,000 like engineer, that actually might not be a great engineer. You might need a $500,000 yeah, engineer if more. You're trying to do some sort of innovative type product. But in his business, our friend, like, yeah, I do think it would be dumb to have that type of person because he's not trying to do those types of things. And so it's all about trying to figure out what you can get for what leverage that you can get for those dollars or that time that you put in, and then using time and money to basically make sure that you're netting out in whatever model of value that you put into your head.
Right. So what I'm hearing is basically that there are many variables to this, and it's kind of stupid course. To have hard and fast rules.
Yeah. Well, but the funny thing is that the hard part of it is those hard and fast rules, like that's humans, right? Like that's how we are wired in order to basically survive if you really want to get to a biological foundation. Like in the reality, it's we're sitting here and we use those hard and fast rules to try to make decisions and survive, but you have to always be challenging yourself. And I think that's what entrepreneurship is. Entrepreneurship is basically sitting on the precipice of like really, really strong opinions and then thinking, oh my God, I might be wrong. Holy cow, am I wrong? Am I wrong? Am I wrong? And that indecision plus that exuberant confidence, I think that's what creates the best entrepreneurs.
Strong views loosely held.
Yeah. 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 Very nicely said.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.